Welcome to this ICIS Chemicals podcast. Now, although the vaccine rollout has begun, there's been a New Year's surge in coronavirus, which is forcing new and tougher lockdowns, not just in Europe, but also now in parts of Asia, including China. How much of a threat could this be to the nascent recovery in the global economy and chemical markets? I'm Will Beecham, and with me to discuss this and other important industry topics, we have Nigel Davis, our Insight editor, who just celebrated 30 years writing about chemicals for ICIS, and John Richardson, our senior consultant in Asia, who's chalked up 23. So the rampant spread of the virus has driven renewed lockdowns in Malaysia, Japan, and locally in the Hubei region of China. In Europe, further restrictions are in place in the UK, in Spain, and other major economies. Asia stock markets fell overnight, and of course, there are jitters about political instability in the US. So we've been reporting on our newswire about tightness and surging prices in some European chemical markets, yet in Asia, prices have been falling. Nigel, I wonder, what are chemical markets telling us about the state of demand and the momentum behind the recovery, do you think?
Well, I think things look fairly positive, say, from a European chemical point of view, particularly if we look at the fourth quarter of last year. I mean, we were writing earlier in the week, or rather late last week, about how cyclical chemical stocks look quite a good bet going into 2021, because we seem to be coming out of that supply and demand trough that we were going into in the latter part of 2019. You know, demand has improved quite considerably since April. And obviously prices have moved up sharply for some of the more commoditized chemicals. Obviously then those costs actually work down into the specialty chemical space, so things get a bit tough there. But of course it's demand that's the big issue at the moment. And the lockdowns in Europe, we don't really know what's happening in terms of manufacturing demand within Europe. Looks quite positive, actually, in the Eurozone. If you look at the PMIs, the Purchasing Managers' Indexes for that region, and of course there's export demand a bit better as well. So, you know, manufacturing looks reasonably good in Europe at the moment. All the data suggests that. So chemicals are doing pretty well at the moment. Cyclical chemicals. You mentioned some quite significant price spikes as regards spot ethylene and spot polyethylene in Europe. That's driven by a number of factors, and there's a podcast on that which I'd encourage people interested to listen to, which should be available shortly. But running into the first quarter, perhaps okay, but then we don't know what these lockdowns really mean in terms of a functioning manufacturing economy and a functioning construction industry, say within Europe. And then we will know better in a few months' time exactly what that means as regards the sort of second quarter and beyond. Whether we are going to sort of bounce back sharply this year, I am not so sure. The GPCA, talking about the Middle East, said recently that they're expecting a 15 to 20% revenue growth in 2021, reversing the 20% contraction last year on the back of higher output and trade, despite no dramatic recovery in upstream crude oil prices. So they're seeing a demand-led recovery. But of course, that's using yesterday's data and not today's.
John, what's your assessment of Asia chemical markets at the moment?
Well, I think certainly some overstocking towards the end of the year. And that's sort of driven prices down a bit. And beginning to get to the Lunar New Year is a while away. So we should get a pickup in demand. The China issue is really concerning because we've got 11 million people now in Hebei province under lockdown. And you can also think at how the Chinese demand has driven the whole picture. Extraordinarily strong growth of demand in China. So it really kicked off from about April last year when China came out of the lockdown first. So its factories were operating when the West was shutting down. And then China was able to take advantage of our pandemic lifestyles. We've talked about this before. that massive exports of face masks, washing machines, refrigerators, tins of paint, hospital gowns, computers, all made in China as we spent more time at home. So you've seen tremendous export growth from China, really from May onwards. And the December exports are probably up about 15%, for a 21% rise year on year in November, which is tremendous. And it all has helped chemicals and polymers demand, because this is why we've seen this extraordinary rise of imports of chemicals and polymers by China. So polypropylene is up 31% January, November, and polyethylene was up 18%, styrene was up. And so all this stuff has been exported to China and re-exported as finished goods. So, you know, you think about the crisis in the West, talk about crisis in the West now. You know, basically, even though people are going back into lockdowns in the West, that demand is still there because China's servicing that demand by dominating export markets. So the issue now becomes, if, you know, the lockdowns extend in China, then the Chinese manufacturing machine might be affected. So we might have the problem that we had in March when the Chinese factories were shut down. And that would be a massive blow for chemicals exports to China. Yeah, I guess that's the risk now. Depends really on whether China can keep this pandemic, this new version of the pandemic, under control.
Have you got any idea what the latest situation is regarding logistics?
Problem is that there's been such huge demand for exports of stuff from China, demand for containers, and there's been less demand for exports to China. So there's been a lack of the right positioning of containers, and I mean a shortage of containers as well. The shortage of containers is also down to cutbacks that took place last year during the height of the pandemic by the container freight companies. So what we've seen is a big rise in the cost of shipping to China and from China in container. And that's affecting trade a bit, yeah. The view is that this should be sorted out next couple of months. What the Chinese are doing are manufacturing more containers. So the manufacturing lots of these, you know, 40 foot, 20 foot containers, to try and increase the supply, because they realize that, you know, the shortage of containers is holding up their export trade.
Thanks, John. And you've also been reflecting on China's stellar polyethylene export market in 2020 and giving some pointers for 2021 in your latest blog post. What do the figures tell us about last year compared with 2019, and what's driving this?
Well, it's been quite extraordinary. The growth across the three grades were probably average around 10% last year, compared with our estimate of 5%. And that actually includes 13% growth for HDPE, 13% for linear low, and minus 2% for low density. And low density has fallen because linear low is so much cheaper because of the increase in linear low supply, big increase in linear low supply, and they compete for many of the same end use markets. And low density has also been tight as well for production reasons. So really, you know, the extraordinary standout story is HD and linear low growing each at 13%. And it means that imports last year were probably around 19 million tons of imports, net imports, that is, imports minus exports, small amount of exports, 18% higher than the year before. 16.8 million tons in 2019. So, you know, this has helped keep the global market tight. And what's driven it is huge demand for packaging for internet sales. And it doesn't seem to me, at the moment as if there's much concern about moving away from plastics into cardboard or whatever for internet sales. A lot of people buying food to be delivered to their homes. And that cries a lot of plastic packaging because, you know, people eating or dining at home has become a big social trend. And the pandemic encouraged more of that as well for a while. But this enormous internet sales growth in general, and increased hygiene needs. You know, the packaging then goes into disinfectant wipes, into disinfectant, etc., which is, I'm sure, is there to stay for a while. And this is the local for local demand in China. We're not as much the export story I was talking about, because most of polyethylene, you know, is consumed in China. It's not used to package exports. A small amount is used to package exports, but most of it is consumed locally.
So we've spoken about before this huge surge in polyethylene capacity in China. There's a lot came on in 2020, there's a lot more coming on this year. But do you think that that big surge in demand is going to balance the market out okay?
I've done some scenarios around this using our data, Will. And yes, if you look at the three polyethylenes individually, you can make a strong case that, you know, capacity as a percentage of demand will be lower than we had expected in our base case from 2020 to 2025. And now this is largely driven by China being much stronger than we expected, but you also must think about the rest of the world. The US, we'd expect a negative growth for polyethylene, but our latest market intelligence suggests it's been positive growth. And this is to do with increased packaging needs related to the pandemic again. People eating more food from supermarkets means lots of smaller packages of food rather than eating in restaurants when you have a big tub of ice cream, for example. That means more surface area demand for plastic. So I think low density and HD in particular, low density and linear low, in particular, will see quite strong growth in the US market this year. We were expecting a negative growth, I think. I think Europe has been stronger than people had expected for these pandemic related reasons. So you add all this together, Will, and it looks like, a lot better balanced market than we'd expected.
That's really interesting. Just finally, you've had a lot of reaction, some of it hostile, to another recent blog post about how collapsing battery costs signal declining demand for oil. What were people telling you, John?
I got some of the detail wrong. I could have done. So I was talking about electric batteries, but the point I was trying to make actually was, I strongly feel that we've gone past this tipping point because of societal pressure. And I think really that we reached that point in 2015 and this global consensus about we are behind climate change really took hold. And a lot of reaction against the need to improve air quality as well. And I think when you have these moments in history where you have this big change in legislation driven by public opinion, the technologies will develop. And I think people were arguing about, yes, I can see some of the arguments around batteries, about the gaps between rechargers, the problem with the charging stations themselves. And there are some sustainability issues around the production of batteries as well. But actually the point I was trying to make, I think this is really important, is that the technologies will come along to meet that societal pressure, whether it's a combination of hybrid, biofuels, hydrogen, and better electric batteries. And there is a view that electric batteries will really, really take off as the technology keeps on improving and the costs keep falling. And in fact, most charging will be done in people's homes in the future. And interestingly, people were saying, oh, you'll never get beyond 500 kilometers in terms of distance between charging. That was only last week. China's just announced a 1,000 kilometer battery between chargers. That's happened very, very recently. So I think that's a sign of the speed of technology. I really feel we're reaching peak oil demand if we haven't already reached it. And that's huge implications, of course, for the chemical industry.
In terms of availability of feedstocks and so on.
Yeah. Availability, cost of feedstocks, it changes a lot of stuff. Don't know what you think, Nigel. What's your view?
I agree, John. I mean, I'm not 100% sure on the tipping point. I know, electric vehicles are taking off in more ways than one. There seems to be a bit of a pushback, perhaps, but I think it's virtually unstoppable now. But it's that overall energy demand as well, which is having such a huge impact on the oil companies and the refining companies as well. So, you know, what are we refining crude oil into? What do we need it for? Clearly, the coronavirus has hit aviation fuel demand dramatically. But then what's the demand going forward into those transport fuels that clearly have an impact then on the availability of feedstock for petrochemicals? That's the big one. And I think that's if not peaked already, but certainly flatlining, if not ready to decline.
Nigel and John, thank you very much for joining me today. It's possible to subscribe to ICIS podcasts now. If you go to your podcast app and search on ICIS Chemical Update, you'll be able to subscribe through any of your popular podcast apps.